This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting live all over the world, as clear as a bell. This is important information for European Americans and for all other peoples around the earth who believe in preserving their heritage and their freedom, and especially for people who are cognizant of the dangers of international supremacism on the basis of the Jewish threat. And I'm talking about Jewish supremacists, ladies and gentlemen. They're often called Zionists. They're called pro-Israel. They're called many different names, but ultimately it's the same idea. It is a supremacist ideology, and it's actually rooted to a great extent in the Jewish religion. I'm not talking about some aspects of the Reform religion. I'm not talking about every Jew. I'm talking about the radical elements within Jewry, which tend to dominate a lot of the Jewish organizations and movements around the world. I have with me, just for a moment, he's dropped by, and he's going to be with me tomorrow and the next day, an excellent scholar, teacher, intellectual, who is of Syrian ancestry, who's going to speak to us about the Syrian question, the Middle East questions in general. And he's just a fantastic intellect. He's been on my program before. He speaks excellent English. His name, again, is Khalid al-Rashad, and he looks like, this is interesting because most of our listeners actually are European Americans or Europeans around the world. He looks like Tom Sawyer or Huck Finn. You could imagine him being in Hannibal, Missouri, rather than with me in Eastern Europe at this moment. He is fluent in Arabic, he's fluent in Russian, he's fluent in French, and he's fluent in English. And I think English is his least fluent language, and so obviously he's doing a lot of work to be with us, because I know it's hard to translate everything in your mind and deal with it, but he does such a fantastic job. He's lectured all over the world. He's lectured in Japan, he's lectured in India, he's lectured in Iran, and he has a lot of comments about what's going on, and I'm going to let him speak with me and with you for the next 4 or 5 minutes and give you kind of a preview of the shows that we're going to be doing over the next couple of days to the weekend. On Saturday, of course, Bob Whitaker will be with us. But he's got a lot of interesting comments. You know, there's a lot of saber rattling going on in Washington, and it sounds like Bush and the neocons are crazy enough to start a war with Syria and start a war with Iran. This is a very serious time, and I think he can give us some perspective on this issue that you don't get in the Zionist-dominated media. Well, my friend Khalid, you know, this blue-eyed Assyrian, I must say, it's great to have you with us here today, and thank you for taking the time to come out and spend a few minutes. And when you know you're going to be interviewed tomorrow and the next day as well, so thanks a lot for coming by.
You're welcome.
So tell me about first off, before we get into the aspects of Syria for a moment and Iraq, and we won't take that long. I know that you have to go give a lecture in a few minutes at one of the major institutions in this town. Tell me a little bit about what your current research is concentrating on. You're doing actually working on a book right now, a dissertation and a book. What is the theme of the book, and how does it apply with the kind of expose that I do and this program does constantly about Israel and Zionism and some of the more extreme aspects of Judaism?
Yes, first of all, let me start from my specialization, and what I'm writing about now is the ethno-political conflictology, political conflictology, mm-hmm. and the part that extremist extremist religious groups play in this conflict all over the world. But I'm concentrating on Arab-Israel conflict now, because I think it's one of the most complicated and interesting conflicts in the world now. And it's, as everybody knows, it's one of the oldest conflicts, more than 50 years, or if we talk about the Balfour Promise or the Balfour Declaration, more than 85 years. So this conflict is very complicated, and I'm trying to, in my research, in my work, I'm trying to show what the part of extremist religious groups from both sides plays, the fact and the fact which prolonged this conflict until this times, until our days.
Now, you say, and we'll be getting into this in the next couple of days, but you say that it seems that a lot of the Arab commentators, even the pro-Palestinian commentators, and a lot of American pro-Palestinian are certainly neutralists, I might say, in the Middle East, that we shouldn't be involved in this conflict, that we should certainly not be doing Israel's bidding in Iraq, and even possibly going to war again for Israel in Syria, which is a nation which is really our friend and wants to be our friend.
Yes.
You say that this is different, and a slight difference to a lot of commentators. You say this is not simply based on this more secular, you know, racial Zionism, but it's also based on kind of a racial or an extremist Judaism.
Yes.
And can you give us a little bit of enlightenment on that issue, a little preview about what you'll be talking about in the next couple of days?
You see, let me start from the from the Arab-Israel conflict and from the Palestinian question first.
Mm-hmm.
You see, unfortunately, now we are living the days that Huntington.
I know you're having to translate in your mind. And
yes,
I appreciate
that Huntington predicted.
Yes.
More than 10 years ago.
Yes.
It's the conflict of civilizations.
Yes.
This conflict of civilizations, unfortunately, I think that the cause of this conflict of civilizations is the state, Jewish state of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because unfortunately, what we see now happening, and what we saw happen last 50 years, is a blind support of Israel by America.
Mm-hmm.
And this support provoked the conflict not only between Palestinians and Jews in Israel, but between all Muslim world and America.
Uh-huh.
Why? Because what all the Muslims, of course,
and Europe maybe
that,
too.
Yeah,
Europe,
yes,
got to
yes, sure. Because what we see is, as you know, Jerusalem is the third holy place of all Muslims, not only Arabs, not only Palestinians, but all Muslims. And we know that according to Muslim tradition, the first place where Muslims have had to pray,
mm-hmm.
Putting his face to pray, is Jerusalem, not Mecca, in Saudi mm-hmm. Arabia. So this is holy, very holy place for Muslims as well as for Jews.
Mm-hmm.
So supporting the blind support, American support, to Israel for all these 50 years provoked the...
For instance, the American Congress, dealing
yes.
with the same subject, recently said that Jerusalem must...
Yes.
They signed a proclamation saying Jerusalem
yes.
Must be totally under the control of Israel.
Yes, exactly.
And, of course, that's a direct affront to the deepest religious beliefs of the Islamic
yes.
people around
yes.
the world.
Yes, exactly. So this support, we know that any resolution... Or resolution project in the United Nations, which even for a bit support the right of Palestinians, or support the Palestinians, America use the right of veto to not to stop this resolution. 90% of the resolution, which was supporting Palestinian interests, was opposed by the veto, American veto. So this, I think, injustice, which all the Muslim world see from the part of Israel and America, mm-hmm. provoked this conflict between the Western people in general and the Eastern people, Muslim world. And we see that America, I think, from my point of view, it's not for me clear why America choose Israel, one country, one small country in the Middle East, as a partner, and they could, on the other hand, have more than 40 friends in the world from Muslim world.
Well, I think the answer to that one is the same motto with the Mossad, you know, by deception thou shalt do war. And what's happened is the American people, through the massive power of the Jewish extremists in the media and in government and in lobbies and so forth, they have blinded the American people to the real injustice of what's happened with Israel. And it's just amazing to me, and it's shocking, and it's really anti-American, as you said. Now, let me ask you a very short question. I know you've got to go in the next 4 or 5 minutes, and I'm probably going to have to continue my show after you leave, and you're going to have to let yourself out, you know, quietly as you can, and I can lock the door later. But let me ask you a very serious question, and that is, okay, isn't it true that a lot of the Middle East turned to America after the close of the Second World War, and because the Middle East and the Arab community was so wary of Europeans, because of European colonial designs for so long, that they looked to America for help, and they actually gave America contracts. America was almost in a privileged position after the war, and then that started to change with America's support for Israel. In other words, we had a tremendous opportunity. That's one reason why American oil companies supposedly were favored in places like Libya, favored in places like Saudi Arabia, favored in places like what's now Iraq, rather than the European companies, because they felt a fear of European colonial designs upon them, and whereas America, they saw that as not having those particular designs upon the Middle East.
Yes. You see, there is one interesting book which has been published about 2 years ago, and this book is under the title Dying to Win. Mm-hmm. This book is for Robert Pape, if I'm not mistaken. So in this book, Professor Robert Pape shows very clear that 98% of terrorists and suicide terrorist bomber were from the countries where there is a presence of American forces, from the countries where America has its forces, you see?
You're talking about like the 9/11 attackers primarily, like Saudi Arabia?
Not only 9/11 attack, but all the terrorist attacks against America and against Israel. Mm-hmm. So 98% of people who are terrorists, they are actually the citizens of occupied territories.
Like for instance, like people can, a lot of Arabs consider Saudi Arabia occupied because of the
of the presence of Americans. Yes, yeah, some people think
and
like
a lot
that,
have come from there, and also and other countries. America had a presence, obviously, in Iran,
yes,
under the Shah.
Yes.
America
and
had
most,
a presence.
Most of the scholars think that the September 11th terrorist attacks is the cause of the American support to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
If America didn't support Israel all these years, September 11th wouldn't have happened.
Well, the September, the 9/11 Commission itself, a formal American commission, in this last report stated that in interviewing the individual terrorists who were involved, that they talked to, you know, who were in the periphery of this plot,
yes,
they admitted that the American support of the Zionist criminal state was,
yes,
their primary motivation.
Yes.
In the 9/11
because what this terrorist believed,
it wasn't about democracy. It wasn't about terrorism.
Yes. That's what this terrorist believe. They believe that Israel use American weapons to kill Palestinians.
Right.
And America give this weapons to Israel almost for free.
Mm-hmm.
They pay just a symbolic sum for this highly.
Well, my friend, a lot of it is free. They give,
yes,
a tremendous American military, billions of dollars of American,
yes,
military support,
yes,
directly to Israel. Absolutely
and
free.
Yes.
Well, it's not free to taxpayer. You know, American taxpayers don't,
yes,
pay this bill.
Yes, actually. Unfortunately, most of Americans, they don't understand that the September 11th, the tragedy of September 11th, actually was caused by the support of American governments to Israel all these years.
That was the motivation. Anyway.
Yes, yes. And when they voted for George W. Bush, actually they voted for this war. Because you see, George Bush, he wasn't taking any responsibility for the war he made, for the lie he said about the weapons of mass destruction of the or the connections between Al Qaeda and Saddam Hussein.
I don't know if they voted for George Bush because they supported the war. I think most Americans didn't. I just think that both Bush and Kerry both said they were for the war. In fact, Kerry in the debates, I remember watching the debates in shock, where Kerry said he would even put more American troops in Iraq, and that we had to put more commitment and more money into this war, instead of simply saying we got to get our troops out now. This is not a war for America. It's a disaster for the United States. It's killing,
yes,
America. It's creating a 9/11 for us, you know, every few months in terms of American casualties and deaths. And it's only hurting our position in the world. It's helping the terrorists. But I don't want to go into all that now. I want to get some of your opinions. But let me ask you another question. I mean, the big thing right now in terms of Syria and in terms of our controlled media and what the president's saying is they keep telling us how that Syria occupied Lebanon. Now, I know that's not true, and I know that you know it's not true, but it's good for someone who's of Syrian ancestry and has close ties to Syria that you tell us what's the situation there. I mean, how in the world can America be concerned about occupation of Syria and Lebanon when Israel right now is occupying the West Bank of Palestine, which the American,
yes,
people supposedly opposed in the United Nations, in fact, for the last 30 odd years. We have, Israel has occupied Lebanon before for 18 years. There was no demand. And Lebanon actually invited the Syrians to come in. So what's your take on that?
First of all, I think it's wrong to call Syrian military presence in Lebanon occupation. Because it wasn't occupation. Occupation means a military invasion without any agreement between the two parts. Syrian military presence was according to the Lebanese demand. Lebanese asked for Syrians to come and solve the problem of civil war. It was according to the agreement between Lebanese and Syrian parts. Of course, there are some Lebanese who didn't like the Syrian presence. But you see, it was according to the agreement between Syrians and Lebanese,
mm-hmm,
the officials in Syria and Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't occupation. Occupation, we can call occupation, for example, Israelis' presence in the south of Lebanon. The Israeli settlement,
an occupation
on the Palestinian
that cost 30,000 Lebanese lives.
Yes,
that caused the destruction of 100,000 Lebanese,
yes,
homes.
Yes, yes, and we can call the occupation American presence in Afghanistan and Iraq. This one we call occupation, but American presence in Saudi Arabia we don't call it occupation because Saudi Arabia didn't lose any people killed or injured
right,
from this war,
sure,
and this was according to the agreement between the government of Saudi Arabia and American government.
How
right?
did you make too much sense? You know, but that's but the thing is, American people just don't get both sides of that question. Now, let me. There's another question. I know you got to go in just a minute, and we'll talk about this more in depth. Did Syria have anything to gain from the assassination of Hariri?
No, this assassination is absolutely against the interests of Syria and opposites the to the interests of Syria, because al-Hariri. He was a friend of Syria, and he was going back to Damascus from Beirut to Damascus. You see all the time, and Syrians respected al-Hariri. They respected his opposition to the government, to Lebanese government, which was under the support of Syria. And they supported them. And when some people tried to call al-Hariri enemy, Syrians said he's not an enemy, he's an opponent. Uh-huh. It's a different thing, because enemy could be only outside our land, outside our culture, and outside our ideas. Al-Hariri was Arabic, he was an Arab. He was supporting the Palestinian question. He supported the resistance of Hezbollah in the south of Lebanon. He supported many Arabic and Syrian and Lebanese common ideas. And he was only the opponent to the Syrian presence. Actually, not to the Syrian presence, but to the causes of Syrian presence.
Mm-hmm.
Not actually the Syrian presence, military presence, but what is the what are the causes of Syrian presence there?
It was the civil war, which was created again and egged on and supported by Israel, even admitted by the Israeli prime minister in his diaries.
Yes.
Moses Sharit, I think his name was. Mm-hmm. And he even talked about the fact that Israel tried to promote the civil war. Of course, Ariel Sharon did too. Well, we'll talk about that again. And ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something else. In tomorrow's show, we had a good conversation earlier, and in tomorrow's show, we're going to also talk about his take on the riots, and this fine gentleman has called those rioters, in his own words, barbarians, which they are.
No, I was talking about barbarians like ethnic groups, not like...
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Like, but that's exactly right. Not like Viking berserkers, that's for sure. But
yes.
And also, he says, and he talks about some of the Arabic kingdoms, such as United Arab Immigrants, which protects their heritage. The people come into work, but they're allowed to protect their heritage, and he sees nothing wrong with Europeans doing it. And he said in the interview, which you're going to be fascinating to hear, and because I know we'll talk about that tomorrow, he's told me specifically that that Europe shouldn't have let these massives in a few years ago, and it may be even too late for Europe now. It was a terrible mistake,
yes.
And that every people has a right to defend their heritage. So that's an interesting take, and this is a man who's proud of his Arabic heritage, and he's proud of his people. He wants to preserve his people. He doesn't want the influence of Europe or European colonialism or American power in the Middle East, but at the same time, he certainly believes that the European people and the American people have a right to preserve our particular culture.
For sure.
And that's the kind of person that we can work with, and that's, I think it's going to be a very interesting interview that we'll be doing over, in fact, 2 days, both Thursday and Friday, and I know that you all will enjoy it. Well, I know you've got to go to your lecture.
Okay.
So, Khalid, I'll shake your hand. And I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, you'd just be amazed. He's a Syrian, and like he was saying earlier to me, you know, the Syria has a lot of very blonde people in it, doesn't it?
Right.
Now this guy has got kind of a sandy brown hair. He's got very light eyes, light skin, a very fine featured European nose. He is, if he was in Hannibal, Missouri, you'd think he'd either be Huck Finn or Tom Sawyer. You probably couldn't decide which one that he was. And it breaks the stereotype of what you think that exists in the Middle East. The Syrian people actually are not very dark. In fact, most of the ruling classes are pretty light skinned, aren't they?
Yes, right.
And it's kind of like South America, where the people at the top of the strata are very light. And there's also a very powerful and strong Greek community.
Yes.
In Syria that has preserved itself literally.
Yes. Yes.
For 2,000 years. And in fact, if you remember, the celebration of Hanukkah, the Jewish celebration of Hanukkah, is about the Jewish recapturing of the temple from the Syrians. So the Jews have hated the Syrians for a long time.
Yes,
their
yes.
hatreds go back forever. And maybe that's part of the thing that's driving their quest right now for war with Syria. Well, we'll talk about that tomorrow, and thanks again for coming by. If you could please let yourself out. Excuse my impoliteness by not taking the door, but I'll continue on with my show.
It's okay.
And we will talk later about getting some of those Amazon books that you're looking to get on your research, and I'm at your disposal to help you in any way on researching this issue for your helping you in your new book. You don't need much help, though. He's a great scholar, ladies and gentlemen, and someday I'd love to see him come to the United States and lecture, and I'm hoping that the next European American conference that he'll come and lecture us on the Zionist point of view and the point of view of how we can stop this World War IV that the Jewish supremacists are trying to create, this war between Islam and really our people. It's a war that's destructive of both. It's stopping us from dealing with the problems within our own borders. We were talking about that earlier as well. That they want to get us involved in these conflicts overseas and Baghdad and Syria, and before that it was the Cold War, so we don't think about what's happening with our own borders. Anyway, it's been very enlightening, and I look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Take care, and be careful, and don't take any wooden nickels. So you know the way out. So again, I apologize for not being able to show you out. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm back with you, and I hope you enjoy that little foretaste of the interviews that'll come forward. You certainly, I'm interested to take your posts and your thoughts. You can go to stormfront.org, the town hall section, and post your questions and comments. And also, of course, you can send me an email at info44@davidduke.com. And don't forget that my email address changes quite a bit because of the situation we have with spam and the rest of it. So please, ladies and gentlemen, remember that when you email me. And by the way, you got it. So when do you want to come back with that?
8:00.
That's fine. You're welcome to do that because then you want to do the Amazon work. Or that would be good because you want to get that done before I've got to go out of town. All right. Thanks a lot. He was talking about doing that work with Amazon. I was going to help him find some of the reference material that he needed for his new book and his new work on this subject. I think it's going to be a tremendous advantage to us to understand the Judaic part of this problem. As you know, my book goes into the essential racial supremacism that existed and exists in Judaism. And not every Jew follows the kind of ideology, but it's certainly fundamental to that belief that Judaism is primarily about the survival and the preservation of the Jewish people as a distinct line, as a heredity, as a genome almost, or a genotype. That's what they see, and to them, in fact, Judaism itself has a wide range of belief, and only in Judaism would a rabbi argue with God and win. And you even find some rabbis out there who say, well, they don't really believe in afterlife or don't believe in God, and they'll say strange things like that because they're primarily, but let me tell you, they've got to believe in the Jewish people. They might have a different opinion about God, but they've got to believe in the Jewish people. And often rabbis say they don't believe in the absolute divinity of the scriptures or even the Torah, or and the Talmud, of course, is one of their chief religious commentaries. They really are primarily, Judaism seems to me, after researching and studying it for many years, it seems to be more of a racial philosophy than it does to be a traditional religion. In fact, what kind of religion doesn't have any provision for afterlife? And Judaism doesn't. You'll meet Jews all the time. I remember something that was very powerful in my high school years. I had a friend by the name of Steve Cohen. And Cohen, again, is that Cohen. He was a very devout, religious Jew. His parents were. We were studying for this test, in fact, and he just lived in my neighborhood down the street. And I went over to his home, And so we started talking about religion. I was going to a school, and we were discussing some of the religious aspects in different religions. Well, anyway, at his home, I got in discussion with he and his father, and we talked about afterlife. And of course, I was a very strong Christian during those times, as I am now. And we talked about afterlife, and the father and he said, they didn't believe in it. That when you die, you die. Just like a flower would die or any other living thing, you're just dead. And that was kind of interesting from the standpoint of a religious view, because if you don't believe there's any afterlife, then obviously your entire orientation would be what you do upon the earth, your power, your financial power, your influence on the earth. And that's what it seems the Jewish people have as their primary directive, you might say. If you're a Star Trek watcher, you'd say a primary directive. But so anyway, it's kind of interesting to understand and to try to understand and contemplate the role of extreme Judaism in terms of the whole Middle East thing. And I think that a lot of writers, as Khalid pointed out very effectively, have shown that there's a terrible misunderstanding as to what's going on there. A lot of times people blame only Zionism, but it's not just Zionism. It's also Judaism, and Judaism has in it a tremendous racial component. I'll give you a couple of examples this way. In Judaism, in the Jewish Tanakh, the Jewish equivalent of what our Old Testament is, it says love thy neighbor as thyself. Well, what does it mean? Well, in the Jewish Bible, it says very clearly, love thy countrymen, love thy racial brethren, you know, love thy Jewish heritage. It wasn't about love everybody. It was about loving their own. And the thing that's that love thy neighbor as thyself was not neighbor was defined as being a person of Jewish descent. So that didn't include loving all the peoples of the world. That was Jews. It was a racially defined religion. And a lot of people even today don't understand that. And that's how Israel was indeed founded. It wasn't simply about people of Jewish religious viewpoint as such. I had an interesting email from Orion Mystery, which talked about some of the issues, and he was explaining that if I talked about the phosphorus and so forth or the American troops that I was maybe supporting in some ways those who are enemies of the country. And I don't think that, and I think that I understand what his point of view was, and I thought his post was very excellent, in fact. But I pointed out, I said that that we've got to talk about the fact that we have been transformed. The Jewish supremacists and their media have transformed us from the country of our fathers with the values of our fathers. I grew up hating communism, and one reason I passionately despised communism was because I knew that the communists and the Soviets massacred and tortured so many people in the cellars of the KGB, the Cheka, and so forth over the decades. And now it seems now with a revelation that America is even setting up torture chambers in the areas of the old Soviet Empire. To me, it's just incredible that we have become in some ways the Soviets. And you can read my article on davidduke.com that deals with that subject. Here, Warden Wake, or The Wake, writes, many of you will have read The Camp of the Saints by French author Jean Raspail, written in 1973 as a novel telling of the destruction of France and the rest of Western civilization by a tide of third world immigration. Below is a link to an article by the same author written in 2004. It has the same bearing on the current situation in France and the rest of Europe. Well, that sounds interesting. I want to read that link, and you can find me at again on stormfront.org. Joseph Morgan writes, this is the last one for the day. We're running out of time, but tomorrow we will definitely continue with the interview with Khalid Al-Rashad. The image of a white woman burned to death by a gang of blacks sticks in the mind, and so when we hear Al Sharpton, a racially conscious and racially aggressive black man, for example, denigrating whites on CBS, psychologically We combine the rhetoric of aggression with the image of aggression. That is why NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, and Fox have never covered a story on a racially motivated crime committed against a white Gentile. That's why newspapers almost never cover the same kind of story. And I must say, sometimes they'll have a mention of some of those stories, but they never do it in depth, and they very seldom talk about the racial aspect of it. That's my commentary on that comment. He goes on, all Jews and non-whites are encouraged to be racially conscious and racially aggressive. That is a natural and stable state of an individual. Now, if NBC then took a speech by Al Sharpton berating whites and making aggressive demands and juxtaposed images of that white woman burning, you create a propaganda image that says blacks speaking in a racially conscious and racially aggressive way equals the moans and grotesque image of a burning white woman. The rhetoric of Sharpton doesn't have to promote harming whites, but simply has to be racially conscious and racially aggressive. The image and name of Al Sharpton would simply become equal to burning of a white woman. That is the way the human mind works. That's the way propaganda works. That's how the Jewish media barons have convinced whites that our desire to maintain white societies with traditional values is equal to a pile of Jewish corpses. Here's Al Sharpton in a quote for him saying, white people still oppress us in America. Black folk have suffered too long. Every black person knows that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's about it, and I'm going to be back with you tomorrow, and we'll have 2 days, I think, of very fascinating interviews with Khalid al-Rashad. And I must say that he has some very interesting comments about the whole problem with the riots in France and Europe. He definitely believes that Europe should preserve its heritage. But he's interesting. He's an Arab that believes the same for his own people. And he believes that a lot of the problems, for instance, that exist in the Middle East have contributed to the Arab immigration into Europe, and that if the Arab kingdoms would have been allowed to run their own affairs, not have this incredible Israeli occupation and dislocation and anger, that a lot of the immigration wouldn't have happened. And he's also recognizing the fact that the Jewish supremacists have been the people who've authored this immigration into both Europe and America. Now, even though that may not make any sense to somebody the fact is it's true, and it can be documented very easily without a shadow of a doubt for any individual who wants to look into that particular issue. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. So I'm going to be back with you tomorrow with a great interview with this very interesting Mark Twain or Huck Finn-looking Syrian. Talking about really important issues, because whether or not the United States goes to war against Syria or Iran are critical issues, and this will be dealt with intensively and exclusively in the interview that we're going to be doing tomorrow and Friday. Until then, God bless you and take care, and use your fingers, let your fingers do the walking, and spread this word and idea across America and across the world. Thanks so much. Bye-bye now.
This has been David Duke for our heritage and our freedom.